那我们今天要继续讲十轮经，那讲到了第三卷哈，要讲到戒律的法门。
So today we're going to continue the discussion on the sutra of ten chakra of Chittagarbha Bodhisattva, and we are going to focus on the third chapter, that is about upholding precepts.
那这个章节的由来呢？其实是菩萨在问哦，因为前面讲修定啊，讲十轮啊，但是我们众生的烦恼还是非常的多。好，那所以主要的问题呢，是在问说，我们要如何净起，怎么样清净我们的心，好，破除所有的烦恼，然后才能够真正的像前面佛讲的哈，修十轮，然后得佛就得到佛轮这样子。
So the main focus of this chapter starts from earlier on we talked about the 10 different chakras, the kingly chakras and the 10 Buddha chakras. But even after talking about all these, people feel that they still have a lot of vexations. So what is it exactly that we can do to purify our mind so that we can go ahead and engage in the practice of the 10 Buddha chakras?
那讲到戒律哈，上一次有讲过哈。大家会觉得说好像就是佛教跟我们讲说哎呀五戒啦十戒十善啦十恶反正就是这个不能做那个不能做通通不能做这样子好像是规范生活的规范而已。其实呢戒律的法门是静心清净我们自心的法门它是非常深奥的那持戒可以得解脱。那它背后的教理依据也非常的深厚。那今天呢我必须要铺陈一些抓一些概念出来齁不然的话呢我们对于这个章节里面佛讲的内容呢就不可能深信然后也不可能会去做它。
So, usually in Buddhism, when people talk about precepts, the general reaction tend to be, oh, you talk about the five precepts and doing the ten wholesome acts, and it's all about telling people, you can't do this, you can't do that. But in fact, the practice of precept is related to ways to purify the mind, and the underlying concept is very profound. And upholding the precepts can actually lead to liberation, and the entire concept behindupholding precept is very deep doctrines. So today, I actually have to talk about some of the underlying concepts behind this chapter so that you will be able to develop deeper faith in the content that's in chapter 3.
所以呢，上次我们有提到啊，在华严经里面有讲到说什么是斯罗波罗蜜就是持戒波罗蜜呢它呢是就是如果能够灭除一切烦恼就是持戒波罗蜜所以想要净其心除烦恼呢就要从持戒开始
So we talked about this last time that this came from the Avatamsaka Sutra how do we purify the mindSo anything that can help you, such as upholding the precept paramita or sila paramita, will be a way to help us purify the mind.
那持戒哈，它非常重要的一个是要有深信，然后要发愿哈，就是如果有深信，然后能够由心境而发愿的话呢，那就自然而然可以。保护我们的心去持戒呢不会毁犯齁。那这个部分呢就来自于说信跟愿呢来自于我们的戒体。那如果说大家有受三规五戒的话不是会跟着法师一起念吗齁就是在发愿然后要信心。像我们法师齁去受参坛大戒的时候观想齁大家受菩萨戒不是有观想吗齁要观想什么三次观想啊什么云啊齁然后充满正报对不对那就是我们得戒体的时候 那法师受聚三坛大戒也是一样，就是要这样观想，然后真的是发清净的心，就是说深信，然后发愿，然后得到戒体之后呢，不持菩萨戒也好，持这个什么比丘比丘尼戒好，就会有什么，又会有增上力，让我们不会轻易的去毁犯它。
So with regard to upholding the precept, precept itself first came from having a deep and pure faith in the Dharma, and then you have to also generate vows. Then with these two as the prerequisite, then naturally the precept will arise and will become a protection, sort of a shield to help you protect your mind from violating the precepts and making mistakes that's going to cause disturbance of the mind. So where do these pure faith and vows came from? It came from our precept body. So many of you have already taken the three refuges and uphold the five precepts. And we recite this all the time. Now, as you are reciting, similar to the monastics, when we take the complete set of precepts for the monastic, in the process, you have to engage in visualization. Many of you probably have already experienced it, that you visualize all these virtuous cloud engulfing you, coming down on you. So this visualization helps you develop and obtain the precept body. And by having this deep faith, vows, and then the precept body, then naturally there's going to be a power, a strength that is generated that will help you further your practice.
那因为今天哈，大家会听到的一个内容哈，是我们大家可能连我自己第一次在读这个内容的时候，我都有很大的 question 哈，都有很大的疑问哈，说为什么佛这样子说哈，尤其是对出家，今天要讲的对象是出家众哈。那第一个就是说，我们持戒是个人的事情哈，那外境的人事物是一个对象哈，那我们不管是六祖坛经哈，或是圆觉经，很多的经典常常告诉我们是什么？要常常见谁的过？见自己过，对不对？然后不能见他人非，对不对？那见他人非就有过失，你们知道为什么吗？今天就会讲到。
I need to give all these, talk about these concepts.Before we enter today's chapter is because the content of today's chapter, to some of you may be a little dubious about it. And even myself, when I first read it, I had, raised questions in my mind. And so ultimately, I just want to remind all of you that upholding of the precept is a personal matter. It's something that we do for ourselves.As to external, other people, they're considered as external phenomena. And remember the quote in the Six Patriarch Platform Sutra, that when we are practicing upholding the precepts, it's important for us to examine and reflect and see our own transgressions and flaws instead of looking outward, looking at other people's flaws.Because whenever you're looking at other people's flaws and identifying those flaws, then you yourself have indeed made a transgression already.
这个原因是什么呢？当我们见到他人过失的时候，所产生的贪嗔痴慢疑，其实内心就是不清净。那天台智者大师，天台宗讲的一念三千，这个细节我们可以不用讲，就是说他所谓的三千世界呢，他是利用华严经的十法界，法华经的十如是，还有什么大智度论的三世间，然后相乘而来，他产生的一个概念，就是说 我们有十法界，每一个法界里面又有十法界，就一百，对不对？然后再加十如是，再乘以十，就千了，对不对？然后再三有一个什么三个世间，乘起来三千的世间，我们的每一念都可能 在这个任三千的里面。也就是说，我们必须，我们的这一念，我们存在哪一个法界里面，我们要对我们的这一念负责。好，那你这一，好。
So the reason that seeing others' flaws, is indeed a violation of precepts is because when you're looking at and pointing out other people's faults, then your mind is already in a state of anger, greed, or, delusion. So this is related to the concept that is raised by, Master Zhizhe from the Tiantai School, the concept that one thought encompasses 3,000 worlds. And these 3,000 worlds, we're not going to go into this in a lot of details today, but these 3,000 worlds are basically the 10 Dharma realms in the Avatamsaka Sutra, the 10 suchness in the Lotus Sutra, and then the 3 worlds in the great, that's mentioned in the great treatise on the perfection of wisdom. So you multiply the 3 numbers, you get 3,000. So basically, it's trying to illustrate the concept is with every one thought, it encompasses all these 3,000 different kind of Dharma realms. So we ourselves, with each thought, the thought can be in any one of these 3,000 realms. So it's our own responsibility to make sure or to guide our own mind. So our mindset is actually set in the right Dharma realm.
比如说我们在日常生活中，虽然我们现在都是生而为人啊，但是呢，如果呢，我们只要一念嗔恨，就跟什么相应？地狱相应。一念贪欲呢，就跟恶鬼。所以我们一天呢，就在三千世界里面来来去去的，一下生气，一下贪吃，一下哎呦哦，这个法很重要呢，我需要持戒，不错，还跟声闻戒有相应啊，一下子你呢就是哎呀，我要发四重誓愿，我要救度众生，你又跟菩萨戒相应嘛，那假设你真的厉害，一念真如就怎么样，就是佛的世界。所以师父，我们的师父圣严法师在 promote 的这个推广的什么人间净土，好，不是说我们要把这个世界弄成什么样子，而是在告诉我们每一个人一念清净一念净土，好，不是我们都要成佛才能够清净，而是说一念清净与什么菩萨相应也好，厉害的跟佛相应也好，就一念净土了嘛。好，那我们练习，我们一天有多少念头啊？想办法啊，就十念也好嘛，早上起来念佛念十声，完全清净的念十声，十念净土。所以师父希望说，我们每个人都能够想办法让自己的念头越来越清净，越来越多念头是清净的，那我们就在建设什么人间净土。
To illustrate that concept of one thought encompasses 3,000 realms, is to look at these examples, that with one thought of anger, then our thought corresponds with the realm of the hell. With greed, then our mind corresponds with the realm of hungry ghost. And we have so many thoughts in and out, arising and falling throughout the day. This moment we may be angry, the next moment we may become greedy of certain food. And then the next thought, we suddenly remember that, oh, we need to practice, or the concept that's been talked about is really important, so I should uphold the precepts. The next thought, perhaps, then you give rise to the great vows, and then you correspond with the realm of bodhisattvas. Or if your practice is really, really substantial, then perhaps your thought will correspond with true suchness, and then you will correspond with the realm of the Buddhas. So every thought you may correspond with different Dharma realms. Just like what our Shifu Master Shenyan has been trying to promote this whole time of creating a pure land in this human realm. What he's trying to get at is not that we should all go out and become crusaders and change the world per se. It's more about focusing on changing our own mindset. with every pure thought that we give rise to, then we also give rise to a pure land. So how many thoughts do we have throughout the day? Numerous. So there are so many of them. Perhaps it's not within our power at this time to control all of them, but we can start out by the 10 recitations of Buddha's name. So in the morning, you wake up and you sincerely and purely recite the Buddha's name 10 times. Then with those 10 thoughts, you have created 10 thoughts of pure land.
其实我个人就觉得是要掌握我们每一个念头真的很不容易哈。就像昨天我们法亲在举办 Go and Mind 嘛哈。那我负责厨房嘛，我就在楼上跟菩萨这个准备餐点。然后不知不觉中呢，我们就开始谈论了哈，什么现在在比较热门的就是这个什么中美贸易齁，然后呢就什么 Trump 怎么样啦齁，然后中国又怎么样，反正美国又这样啦，中国又这样啊，然后两边这样巴拉巴拉，然后呢一下子又什么香港又怎么样齁，然后一下子又苏联嘛齁，然后再来是北韩嘛齁，然后就哇，然后就越谈越多是非齁，然后我就发现我们两个一下子齁这样一下那样，那到底是贪还是嗔还是愚痴还是嫉妒，我们也搞不清楚，然后就每一念大概有不知道多少个念头，就是在这里上上下下，但以我们两个人的观察也讲不出个所以然来，那可是呢就动了很多的贪嗔痴慢疑的念头，完全不清净。那我们一般也是，我们比如说我们很生气对不对，其实路边啊，这个人打那个人，你也没那么生气，因为你没有打到你认识的人，对吧？就是他打他，说哎，不应该就这样了，你还蛮放得下。但打到你的儿子跟你的先生，你就没有那么容易了啊。那打到你的话呢，那更气了，一样的嘛，就是国与国之间的利益冲突，那要解决的时候，就看你在哪边，然后或是看你比较获利在哪边。那这都跟我们这个，那这都是有能所的，对吧？但是他真的很不容易。我们生气的时候，一般都是说这个事情不对，这个人不对，这个事件不对。那可是问题是说，他真的伤害到你，那你怎么办？我觉得我们还是不能压抑我们自己，说我不能生气。但是可以生气，可以反抗的时候呢，不要去伤害到别人。还有一个我觉得我引以为这个模范的，就我们总要有一个比较好的人作为我们的模范嘛。我记得我看一本书啊，有一个修行者就被陷害，就关进监牢，人家就对他又打又骂又凌辱，对不对？他在被那种迫害的当下，他在写书的时候，他就说他不断的告诉自己说，我不可以失去我的慈悲心。好，面对这些迫害你的人，他一直告诉自己，我不可以失去我的慈悲心，我不可以失去我的慈悲心。啊，这就很感人嘛，对不对？好，那我们一般都说，哎呦，痛死了，这样还算是了不起的，就好痛啊，人痛。那你如果是内心产生那种嗔恨心，说等我怎样的时候那就那个心念就不同层级了，对不对？
So it's actually really difficult to be in charge of our own thoughts. Yesterday, there was an event with the youth group. It was about Go and Chan.
Mind. Go and Mind.
Go and Mind. And so I worked in the kitchen prepping for the meal, and in this process, I started having a conversation with another volunteer, and we started chit-chatting, talking about starting out with the trade war between China and the U.S., and then meander to Hong Kong, to the issues with Russia, to North Korea, and we have all these discussion goes around and around. And I realized that the discussion didn't really go anywhere, that between the two of us, with our understanding, it didn't really lead to any substantial results. Instead, there was just a lot of thoughts of jealousy, perhaps, anger, greed, or delusion, ignorance. It was all in the mix in our conversation. So the thoughts were not pure at all. And that came out of the discussion that we had about all these different current events. And sometimes when we're on the street, and this is all about so having the notions of subject and object, we're talking about something that's external, focusing and projecting our energy on those objects. Sometimes on the street that we see people hitting each other, and because it's more removed from us, so we may be able to feel kind of more at ease, and we may perhaps say, oh, that's not right to be hitting each other, but we seem to be able to just kind of let it go really easily. But when it comes to if this hitting is happening to your own family, your husband or your kids, it's not as easy to remain so objective and so calm. Needless to say, if you yourself is the one that's being hit, then it's even harder to be in control of your own thought and not give in to the thoughts of anger or fear or delusions. So, but then again, this is all still within the realms of having a dualistic mindset. People talking about this and talking about that, it doesn't really lead to anywhere. And when it comes to when things are more at arm's length, it's easy to remain calm and objective. But when it's personal and you yourself is the one that is being harmed, it's not as easy to remain this way. And I personally do not condone the notion of repressing your own anger. When you are being oppressed, then you do need to do something about it. But there is a fine line. Perhaps what we need to adhere to is that you can object to the oppression, but while at the same time, try not to harm others as a consequence. So there's a practitioner's story that I've read that served as a really good role model for me. For this practitioner, he was wrongly prosecuted and put in jail. And while he was in jail, he was abused and hit, harmed in many different ways. And during this process, when he wrote his own autobiography later, he wrote that I kept reminding myself in this process that I shall not lose my compassion. I cannot lose my compassion. And so this line stayed with me for a very long time. That as a way to, as a reminder, when we are faced, confronted by harms and people hurting us, how do we be in control of our own mindsets?
所以呢，智者大师哈，就是智疑大师呢，他强调说，我们在日常生活呢，必须要严正身心哈，我们的身口意三业呢的任何一念心都不可以被妄心所动。这就是一个修行人在日常生活身与意三的任何念头不可以被妄心是什么有能所就是虚妄嘛那所以该那也很简单不没有利益众生的话不说没有利益众生的事不做没有利益众生的思想念头不要去动它看起来很简单其实蛮难的像我整天昨天一天下来齁大概都在做这些事情哈哈他没有利益有啦煮饭给他吃还是有点利益啦齁那讲了 一早上的话都是没有利益的齁那对喝咖啡当然没有利益众生啊哈哈所以呢能够 一天下来真的利益他人利益自己的齁是念头实在是不多齁
So, as to how do we regulate our mind? How do we be in control of our mindset to help us stay focused? Master Zhizhe had emphasized this. He said that as practitioners, we must be rigorous and proper with both our mind and body. With every their actions, speech, and thought, the mind should not waver, be deterred or by deluded and wandering thoughts. What is considered deluded thoughts? Any thoughts that arises from the notions of subject and object is a deluded thought. So he provided a very succinct guideline. Do not say anything that does not benefit sentient beings. Do not do anything that does not benefit sentient beings. And do not engage in any sort of thinking that is not related to benefiting sentient beings. Well, the guidelines may appear to be very simple, but it's very difficult to do. I reflect about what I did yesterday. Basically, most of the activities I engage in are in violations of these three guidelines. Yes, I did a lot of cooking, and that may have benefited some sentient beings. But then the talking certainly did not. And then later on, I drank coffee that didn't really do anything that benefited sentient beings. So it's not so easy to follow the guidelines. But yet, it's very clear over here.
那这句话呢, 再深入一点哈，就是如何净其心，就是上次我们讲的没有办法细讲的哈，就是说如果什么是最上的持戒呢，第一个呢，如果没有能所，没有我跟我所哈，能所，然后可以远离诸戏论，然后又一切无所得，这三个就基本上在讲佛法的全部哈，还有什么成佛之道的整条路就在这边，所以持戒为什么可以解脱呢？那这个三点我没有能所，这个国行法师讲很多了，那一切无所得就是心经讲的嘛，那今天要来讲什么叫做戏论。
So last time we briefly touched upon this notion of how to purify the mind, exactly what do we do, and it's captured here in this verse, without giving rise to the dualistic mindset of subject and object. Depart from all teachings that do not lead to liberations, and then uphold the concept that there's nothing to obtain, then this is called the supreme sila. So basically, number one, without holding the dualistic mindset. Number two, depart from all teachings that do not lead to liberation. And number three, with nothing to obtain. These three alone encapsulates all of Buddha Dharma. And this is a very clear roadmap to the path of becoming a Buddha. And with these three, the non-dualistic mindset, Master Guoxing has talked a lot about this already, so I'm not going to focus on it today. And number three, with nothing to obtain, that is the essential teaching in the Heart Sutra. And so number two is what I'm going to talk about a little bit more today, is to depart from all teachings that do not lead to liberation. What are these kind of teachings that do not lead to liberation?
好，那这个戏论哈，师父在讲那个佛遗教经的时候呢，他把这个戏论分成三个层次哈，一个是呢，我们在日常生活常常做的哈，就是闲杂语、散乱语、天南地北、东家长、西家短嘛哈，那就是解这个 summarize 成一句话哈，就是我们常常就去哪里去喝咖啡、聊是非哈，这叫做第一个层次的戏论。
So it was summarized in Buddha's last teaching, the Sutra of the Buddha's last teaching, of what is considered activities or teachings that do not lead to liberation. So the first category is prattles, scattered talk, idle talk, gossips, and talking about this person, that person. Basically boils down to, there's a Chinese phrase that says, it's not possible to be translated to capture that rhyme. Let's sit down and have coffee and let's gossip about other people. So any kind of talks that surface in that kind of situation will be considered as actions that do not lead to liberation.
那第二个层次的戏论呢，就是玩弄文字。比如说在我们这个就比较高阶一点的戏论，就不管是各个领域， 那我们都有很多的这个专家学者，对吧？好，那准备这个要一举什么？一举成名，一炮什么？哦，一炮而红，我绞尽心思哈，然后这样子就是炫耀自己的学问啊，炫耀自己的才能啊，哈，文字啊，这样子哈。那古时候的这个进京赶考的就是这样哈，全一生全部就好。所以想尽办法在文字上这边，那可是写出来的东西或是就对人类或是对他人也没有什么太大的帮助，好，那这是第二层的习论，也会花荡我们很多的时间。好，我有一次就在跟另外一个学科学的，好，大家在那边，因为他后来也转业了，好， 我也算转行了，好，对，我也是转行，我是学科学的，好，我转行了啊，那个学科学也转行，然后我们一讨论的结果，他说这个科学哈，这个再怎么弄就是这样，就是弄一弄多很多 paper 出来这样子而已哈，就对人类好像也没什么太大的贡献。我说对，我说哈，我出家，人家说好浪费哦，人家整个国家培养你哈，到念到这个程度，结果你出家什么都不做，那我那我说都不用担心哈，我说我又不是天才。那我不做的事情马上有另外一个科学家可以取代做一样的事情，所以我也不会觉得很 guilty。 但是真的是说，如果我们作为一个科学家只是为了冲业绩，一天到晚做一些实验，然后 paper 很多，大部分都是没有用的，那也是就是一种习论。
The second level of activities or speech that do not lead to liberationis wordplays or intellectual display of your knowledge. This is a little bit higher level than the idle gossip and prattles that we were talking about earlier. So this happens in all fields, academic fields or whatnot, that people spend a lot of time writing papers or doing research, with the intention, though, to become famous or to say something that will immediately jostle the field or whatnot. So it can take up a lot of time when people engage in this kind of activities. Yet, the bottom line is, do all these papers and research, do they really lead to benefiting human beings, benefiting sentient beings? Does it lead to anything that's substantial? I used to be in the scientific field, and I remember I was having this discussion with a fellow colleague of mine earlier, and we talked about all these scientific research, and a lot of them does not make any real contributions to the well-being of sentient beings. And it's done this way or that way, the methodology changes, whatnot, but there's no real influence.And I myself, some people have, I guess I have taken a different path. And some people may have think that, or they have talked about it, saying that, well, it's such a waste for someone like you who has spent so much time and people have invested so much in you to become a scientist to now suddenly become a monastic. And you become a monastic and you do nothing. You don't contribute to the world. I have heard this.But to me, it's okay. That kind of criticism doesn't matter because I'm not a genius. So whatever scientific discovery that has yet to be made, there will be other people taking up my footstep to make them. But the bottom line is, with all these kind of research or intellectual discourses, do they lead to substantial benefits to sentient beings? And so anything that does not,create or benefit sentient beings are considered activities that do not lead to liberation.
但是哈，科学的研究是有必要，而且它是一个很漫长的过程，很多基础的细节的东西都必须要都要了解清楚，才可以真正的有一个突破性的发展。这些我们必须要能够就是 acknowledge 所有科学家的一些贡献。那我要讲的只是说，如果我们做科学的人只是想要成名啊， 想要赚钱的时候呢，哎，这个时候呢就会挖空心思，那这个东西就不见得是对自己好或是对了他人好哈。哎，要强调的是这个。
I want to emphasize that scientific research has its place, and it's itself as a discipline requires a lot of rigorous work, a lot of attention to details, and it's a very long path. It's a slow path that leads to discoveries. So when research are done right, then they do make contributions, and we need to give them their due recognition. The point I'm trying to make, I'm not against those kind of research. I'm just saying that some researchers, when their focus, when their intention is not creating benefit for sentient beings, if their intention is for self-gains, for recognition, for fame, or whatnot, when the intention is not in the right place, it's that kind of research or so-called paper, academic discourse that will be considered quite futile and useless.
那第三个层次的细论呢，就是说凡是与三法印、解脱道跟菩萨道不相应的种种议论，好，比如说我们在一天就在讲说，哎，这个是啊，非啊，哈，啊，到底这个是对，哎，到底是中国对还是美国对，哈，啊，到底是怎样，在一那些是很多我们必须要政治的考量的关心，然后国家元首有国家元首的立场，哈，他。那不是我们凡夫老百姓可以全面看到的，那我们可以关心可以讨论，但是如果我们结党结派两边，好，就像有人说选举的时候一个小家庭都可以吵起来，好，就有人护持什么派，有人护持这个党，有人护持这个党，然后一家只有四口分三个党吵啊，哈，这就没有必要了嘛，哈，然后呢就一开口就吵架，那这个就是你跟解脱跟利益众生不相应，然后跟解脱道也不相应，然后就吵了半年，就为了选举总统要选哪个党的，那这就不划不来了哈。
The third level is anything that does not correspond with the three Dharma seal or the path of liberation or the Bodhisattva path. So,Let's take the earlier example of the trade war between China and the U.S. People take different sides, on the U.S. side, on the Chinese side. You don't know which one is right. And as civilians, we really don't have the whole pictures. Politicians have their own considerations, or leaders have their own considerations. And we oftentimes fall short. We don't see the whole picture.It is okay to try to keep up and to update ourselves with what's going on. But there's really no need to fight over it, since our understanding is, in fact, quite limited. So when it comes to election time, a lot of people start taking side, and there are also ample examples of people within a family. They are for different political parties, and they root for different candidates, and they start fighting among themselves. That type of behaviors and actions would be quite pointless, and they do not correspond with the path to liberation.
那还有一种哈，又有一种戏论哈，是比较这种老参啊哈，高阶的修行人会犯的哈。我记得我有一次参加禅期呢，那师父在讲空性，好，那就空对不对哈？讲空的话就讲有站一边，讲空不是站一边嘛。然后师父就说，这个空要以空空，对不对？好，蛮有道理的。那台下马上就有一个禅修的人就说，那要以空来空那个空，就三个空了嘛齁，然后师父马上就说细论，好，那你不然你还可以加四层加五层对不对，你不是真正的了解那个空，就是只是以空来破你执着的那个空，就是中道观对不对，但是他就马上就说以空来空那个空齁，我就印象很深刻，师父马上给他两个字，细论。
And there's also another level to this third kind of activities that do not lead to liberation, which often happens, occurs among people who are very seasoned practitioners. And I remember this example vividly, that during one of the meditation retreats, Chan retreats, Shifu gave a talk on emptiness, and because existence and empty and void, they are also the two extremes. So we don't hold on. We're not supposed to hold on to either extremes. So you are supposed to also empty the notion of voidness, emptiness. So when Shifu said that we also have to empty emptiness, there's someone immediately in the audience that says, we also have to empty Shifu says we have to empty the emptiness. And someone then said, we have to empty the emptying of the emptiness. And
use the emptiness to destroy the emptiness, the concept of emptiness.
That's what Shifu said.
Yeah.
Right. Shifu says we use emptiness to destroy the concept of emptiness. And then someone in the audience then said, we have to then use emptiness to destroy the
emptiness that destroy the emptiness.
So this goes round and around, levels by levels. And regardless, that person did not have any real understanding of emptiness. It was all just clever talks. So immediately Shifu, gave back, say, just clever talk, meaning it does not lead to any true liberation, or it's not important. It's not substantial for practice.
所以我们在讲一些什么无我啊、空性啊、的道理的时候呢，就是说，当我们还没有真实理解的时候，想要用不同的方法来解释它，然后大家就在那边玩文字游戏的时候，那就真的是一种不相应的议论，这是我们必须要注意的。
So, whenever we discuss the concept of no self or the empty nature, oftentimes because we don't have a experiential understanding of it, then we start to use a lot of words or concept to try to go around and around to describe it. This is something we have to be careful about, that too much of that can become a kind of prattle and idle talk that, again, has any significance for our practice.
我这个铺陈还没有，还剩下两点才要进入主题。另外一个析论呢，是也是智宜大师讲的，他把析论分成三类，师父也是分成三类，见思析论、尘沙析论跟无明析论。那见思析论就是我们有执空，执着空的时候就会有见思，所以会有知见不正确，远离空正见，还有呢，因为远离空正见所带来的烦恼，执着这个有那个有的时候呢，我们就有无量的烦恼。那这个是在登地以前的修行者就执着有嘛。那尘沙细论呢，要有是什么？执着空。当你见到空性之后，执着空就没有办法什么发起救度一切众生的智慧。那这时候就会有尘沙细论，然后最后的一分，最后呢要修中观的是什么？当我们要破除所有一切无明，就是十地菩萨还有最后一分的无明是什么？十地菩萨的最后一分无明是还有众生可度的这个想法。我们想我相、人相、众生相、寿者相，对不对？那你还有众生相，还有众生可度啊，嘿，这是一分 last 一分无明要破，那就是亦有亦空，非有非空的境界。那这个呢，要把它这样子的话，就是从凡夫一直到成佛，要破这三类的细论。
Master Zhi Xu also analyzed this concept of anything that does not lead to liberation into three different levels. The first one is someone who is attached to the concept of existence or being attached to this concept. And that's for people, practitioners who have yet to enter one of the 10 stages of bodhisattvas. And the second level is for people who have already entered the 10 stages of bodhisattvas, and then they become attached to the concept of emptiness. And when practitioners are attached to emptiness, then it's hard to generate the compassion to help out all sentient beings. So that's the second level of the so-called prattle or useless activities. The third level is for practitioners who are already approaching the state of Buddhahood, what they are still attached to is the concept of they are sentient beings that I must try to help and must try to deliver. And so with that, that is the last bit of delusion that they have, that there's a subject and object, there's someone to be saved or to be to provide help to. So these are the three different levels. And in a way, it's also sort of a roadmap of the different kind of attachment that we need to get rid of.
好，那现在好，快要进入正题了哈。所以呢，那所谓的中道观呢，好，刚刚讲不是最后中道观，中道观它的修持哈，一定是破两边的。好，那所以在圆觉经里面有一个十对法，好，那在六祖坛经有36对，好，全部都是在讲这边跟那边，然后都非这个非那个，或是这两个是一样的。好，那这些是在修中观的 level 了哈，还不是破空破有破空哦。所以圆觉经里面我们随便讲一个，他说戒定慧跟淫怒痴哈，淫怒痴就是破戒嘛，啊戒定慧是持戒对不对哈？这两个都是修犯痕哦。然后地狱天宫皆为净土，好哇。我们还在说什么一念去地狱哈啊，一念去什么啊哈，恶鬼到了哈啊，然后一念是佛念对不对哈、啊？菩萨刚刚不是在讲说一念清净就一念成净土吗？然后嘛一念嗔恨心就进地狱吗？然后现在是想说，哎 ，sorry， 地狱天宫都是净土。好、啊，那我们常常在佛经里面会看到这种，他说这个是好，这个不好。然后到最后是这两个是一样的，然后就很难接受，对吧？到底要法师，你到底要我们怎样嘛？最后说佛，你到底在说什么？哈，这中道义哈，真的是要破无明。那我今天呢，以我哈解这个读第三卷哈佛陀讲持戒的方法的时候呢，我说如果我不把这个搬出来，我没有办法说服我自己哈。这佛陀讲的持戒到底是在讲什么哈？所以以上铺陈是要讲接下去很难以接受的内容哈。
This is also related to the concept of middle path. Middle path goes beyond. Going beyond the dualistic mindset, the two extremes of existence or the voidness or emptiness, is trying to help people break away from that. So in the Sutra of Perfect Enlightenment, there are 10 dichotomous pairs that were presented in the Sutra, and in the Six Patriarch Platform Sutra, there are 36 pairs of these dichotomous terms. By raising them, the point is to illustrate that it's neither this or that. We shall not get stuck on the two different extremes. It goes beyond the dualistic mindset. And so, for instance, one of the 10 pairs that were listed in the Sutra of Perfect Enlightenment were when someone upholds the practices, precept, concentration, and wisdom, comparing that with upholding greed, anger, and delusion, both of these are considered as pure conduct. Or the other pair is heaven or hell. Both are pure land. And so people may be raking your head thinking that what is this talking about? We were talking about we should set our mind at the right place, that what mind can go to hell or go to heaven. But now suddenly we are being taught that both hell and heaven are indeed pure land. So sometimes people become frustrated, and what is exactly, how should we handle ourselves? So again, presenting these dichotomous pairs is to show that ultimately in our practice, we shall not be attached to the two extreme viewpoints, and we should practice the middle path. It's to help us break the ultimate delusions. And all this I have said so far up to this point today is a introduction, so to speak, to the third chapter. Because in the third chapter, the Buddha provided very specific instructions about dealing with violation of precepts. And without having this non-dualistic understanding, having a concept of this non-dualistic view, it would indeed be difficult for us to really understand what the Buddha is trying to say. So again, this is an introduction for what is to come.
那这个章节哈，是我们刚刚是主题是什么？无依行法，就是千万不要做哦，就是你要持戒哦，这些都不要去做哦哈。那佛一开始就讲，他说呢，其实呢，我们这些有情哦，学佛啊，修行啊，怎么样呢？想要得涅槃齁，有三个主要的因，就是什么？皈依三宝，依止佛，依止法，依止身，就可以精勤修行，就可以得涅槃的。那我们一天到晚在念啊，我们大家也都皈依了嘛齁，他说哎呦，这怎么皈依三宝就可以得涅槃的？这怎么说呢齁？
So again,as a quick reminder, the third chapter, the focus of third chapter is about the undependable actions. These are the actions that we are taught not to do. We should never do them if you want to be on the path of liberation, obtain nirvana. But when it goes to the earlier beginning, the Buddha actually said there are three main causes that can lead to nirvana bliss, to the ultimate attainment, which is abiding in the Buddha, abiding in the Dharma, and abiding in the Sangha. Following these three causes and then practicing rigorously, it will lead to nirvana. Most of us here have already taken the refuges to the three triple jewels. And perhaps you'll wonder, what is it really so easy that I only have to take refuge and then I can be on my path to nirvana? How does it work?
那这个章节比较 focus 的是在皈依身，第三个，因为持戒是要靠人嘛。好，那佛的教法是告诉我们怎么持戒，那我们要不要相信他，要不要如法去做？那谁讲的？佛，对不对？那接下来的后面几个章节里面会提到怎么念佛，怎么皈依佛。那圣教其实前面两个对我们来讲，大家都觉得真的很相信佛嘛。真正的相信佛，你就不会问一个问题说，法师，那我往生的时候呢，我应该去西方极乐世界，还是东方琉璃世界，还是那个叫做什么弥勒内院还是还有哪里可以去啊？问一大堆好，这样不行呢，你就很 confused。就像师父说，你脚踏那么多船到时候你要往生的时候，你就最后掉到水里面去。因为我们没有办法如真正的信佛，所以我们会有这样的差别分别，对不对？那第二个法呢？法我们更有分别了怎么分别？对，八万四千法门光在我们自己体系里面，大家就开始分别说，法师，你觉得我应该梳洗好还是墨照呢？还是化头那化头你觉得哪一个比较好？ 比较容易快开悟。啊，我自己 create 的我觉得还蛮不错，可以用吗？哦，好多问题。那然后现在来到美国之后更惨，就觉得法师我觉得南传的比较就近，就佛陀的怎么，南传的叫什么，就原始佛教呢，这最接近佛的教法呢，我们汉传的好像好，那藏传的又怎样，然后那个北传的哇，一大堆传出来，然后我该怎么办呢？我下次学这个学那个。那你就是说这里面就讲三圣嘛，声闻缘觉跟菩萨圣，到底哪个好？然后后来就说不要，我告诉你法华经讲什么唯一的佛圣，有没有？所以那三圣都方便的啦，没有那么好。哇，那就是谤法，所有佛陀讲的都是因为为了我们讲的。然后那这个章节里面特别讲到三圣教，是不可以毁谤它，它有它的功能的，也不能说我告诉你这个声闻这个缘觉齁，好，我告诉你我是菩萨道的齁，我告诉你我是拜法华的，唯一的佛圣最高，我们缘觉经法华经跟华严经是最究竟的，什么经中之王，其他都是小不经，不究竟。哇，这就是谤法。等一下再讲谤僧。
So the next part of this discussion is actually going to focus on the third part, abiding in the Sangha, because after all, upholding the precept is related to who holds precepts? People really uphold precepts. So later on, we're going to talk about the third, abiding in the Sangha, and how that relates to precept, upholding the precept. But then quickly, let's go back to point one and two, abiding in the Buddha, abiding in the Dharma. And many of you may think that, by simply abiding in the Buddha and the Dharma, then I can be on my way to Nirvana. And why is it so easy? Is it really easy? Do we really believe in the Buddha? Do we have true belief and faith in the Buddha? Think about it. When you really do have true faith in the Buddha, that you would not come to Fa Shi and ask, Fa Shi, when I die, which land should I be reborn in? Should I go to the Pure Land? Should I go to the Eastern Land? Or should I go to this and that places? If you have a true faith in the Buddha, you would not be asking this question. Or do you really believe in Dharma? Do you have true faith in Dharma? If that's the case, then you will not be making differentiations of all different kinds of dharmas. We don't even have to talk about the different schools of teaching. Just within our own organization, the methods that we teach here, oftentimes people will come to me and ask, which one should I pick? Which method should I pick? Counting breath, silent illumination, or hua tou? With hua tou, which one of the hua tou should I pick? Or should I use the one that I created myself? And then after you have come to the U.S., the situation becomes even more complicated. Mahayana Buddhism, the one that we are practicing, is not good enough. I think Theravada Buddhism might be more direct. It came from the original Buddhism. And then you come in contact with Tibetan Buddhism or the Northern Japanese or Korean Buddhism, and they get really confused. Which one to pick? Which path should I go? And some people then further on will say, I study this sutra, or Buddha talks about the three different paths of Shravakas, Pratyeka Buddhas, as well as Bodhisattvas. I think none of those are ultimate. The most ultimate is the Buddha path, and that's what I'm practicing. All of you guys who are practicing the other paths are no good. You are inferior to the path that I have chosen. That I study Lotus Sutra and Avatamsaka Sutra, which is the most supreme sutra, and all the other ones that you've studied are not as good as mine. Having these kind of thinkings, you are indeed in violations of precepts because you are slandering what the Buddha had taught.
那至于皈依僧哈，这就问题大了哈。很多的我知道哈，很多的人来学佛哈， 那都因为看见僧众的种种行为，那他不仅不学佛，他就去就放弃他皈依三宝，他决定要去学别的宗教，或是他都不学任何宗教了，他觉得他对于这个所谓的宗教他就失去信心。我常常不管是佛教还是别的宗教，常常我们会因为传宗教的宗教师的行为呢，对这个宗教丧失信心。那我们佛教不要讲什么性丑闻，对不对？天主教有没有啊？然后就天主教也有什么性丑闻，什么乱七八糟的丑闻，所以你知道天主教不灵嘛，然后你就，然后呢，佛教也是啊，说哎呀，这个大法师怎么这样呢？大宝王为什么去结婚？大宝王不能结婚吗？我也不知道。但是他就是啊，因为什么？法师应该这样，法师应该那样嘛，然后因为僧众的种种行为，让大家对三宝师丧失信心，甚至不学，这是一个对自己最大的惩罚。在这里面，佛陀特别就把僧众比丘拿出来讲。那比丘应该如何持戒？是我们每一个人的典范。然后比丘破戒，我们应该怎么如何的看待？然后僧众应该怎么样的 handle 处理？在这边就是如何持戒，如何看待破戒的人，他有一个非常详细的说明。
So those complications I listed earlier are only related to the first two. When it comes to the third one, abiding in the Sangha, it's even more complicated. And to be truly abiding in the Sangha. I know a lot of people who, because they have observed certain behaviors of the Sangha monastics, then because they do not agree with those behaviors or conduct that they have observed, then they have decided to no longer be a Buddhist, or sometimes they will further become an atheist and not take up on any religious belief. And this does not only happen within Buddhism, Buddhist community, but also within other religions as well, Catholic or Christianity. There are, in all these three, Buddhism, Catholic, and Christianity, there are all news of sexual misconducts of committed by people who are supposed to be in the position of spreading and teaching the principles of that religion. And so people they lose faith and confidence in the teaching because of the behaviors of those people who are supposed to be the transmitters of the teaching. And to me, to lose one's faith, to allow oneself to lose faith of the religion due to other people's behaviors would be actually a big punishment that you dish out to yourself.
所以哈，这个宗教人士哈，我们就把僧宝当成就是统称宗教人士，就是传法的人哈，就是宗教师来讲呢，他的最大的过失哈，他可能讲话太大声啊，骂人啊哈，然后呢，这个太追求物质的享受啦哈，这些都是小小的问题哈。身为宗教师，最大的过失就是我们毁犯了我们所持的根本戒。好，那以那个现在目前的宗教师来讲，据我所知的，我所知道的主要主流的宗教里面呢，就是佛教啊，佛教跟当然佛教应该讲汉传佛教，就是佛教跟天主教的神父跟修女，还有我们就是至少汉传南传的哈的比丘跟比丘尼是必须持不结婚戒的哈，不能结婚，不能有性行为的这个犯行的戒律哈。所以对于我们这两个族群的宗教师来讲呢，就是会常常就会牵扯到什么性丑闻啊，就是很大的 这个犯戒的问题哈。那四个佛教的四根本戒哈，他讲是性罪，哈，或是遮罪。只要讲遮罪，就是说你受戒好有犯，你没受戒就没犯。那性罪是什么？你不管有没有受这个戒，你都犯，你都有罪。好，那这个四个根本戒，我们持的四个根本戒里面呢，那不仅是遮罪，也是性罪，是无一刑法，是绝对不可以啊去做的。好，那里面当就是说不能什么不能有淫欲行为，不可以去杀人，不是三宝物里不能用，因为我们是法师嘛，哈，不是三宝的东西不能用。那你不能大妄语说，诶，我已经证得阿罗汉果，或是我是那个，你知道吗？哈，哪一尊佛再来的呢？哪个菩萨再来的？你知道吗？哈，哇，这种大妄语千万不能讲啊！那不能说我是什么啊，我是圣母玛利亚派来的哈，然后什么之类的，就是你讲这种妄语是不可以的。
So in this chapter, the Buddha used the monastic, the Sangha, especially the monks, as an example to illustrate how people should uphold precepts and how people should deal with the monks that have violated precepts. And so that is the next part of the teaching. So here, the focus is on religious people, and religious people over here in this current discussion encompasses Buddhists, monks and nuns, as well as the priests and nuns in Catholicism, as well as in the pastors in Christianity, etc. So for these type of people, there are some violations that they may commit, such as scolding loudly, using really harsh words, toward other people, or becoming very greedy about wealth, money. But those comparing to the four fundamental precepts, those, the slandering and the greedy part, those are relatively minor. The most fundamental, important ones that one shall not violate are the four fundamental precepts. To my knowledge, I know in Catholicism, the priests and nuns are, they also observe the precept of celibacy, similar to Buddhist monks and nuns. So for us, for Buddhist monks and nuns and priests and nuns in Catholics, they are not supposed to engage any sexual activities. So this sort of becomes a source of problem, or something that whenever a violation occurs, that tend to center around this. And this is part one of the four most fundamental precepts, which is also called the fundamental nature precept of nature precept. And what it means is that there are other precepts. If you have not taken the precepts, then violating those would not be considered a violation. On the other hand, with these four fundamental precepts, if you violate them, regardless if you have taken the precept or not have taken the precept, it is still considered a violation, and there will be consequences to your violation. So these are the four precepts that you should absolutely not commit, and they are the four fundamental undependable actions.
大妄语。
And so the four of them are, the first one is celibacy. You have to follow the pure conduct of not having sexual activities. And the second one is killing for any causes. And third one is using or stealing anything that does not belong to the triple jewels. Again, these are we're now talking about the monastics. So monastics should not be using or things that does not belong to the triple jewels. And the fourth one is to tell a major lie. And what is considered a major lie are the ones that you, without having obtained that state, falsely claiming that you have achieved arhatship, or that you are the reincarnation of so-and-so Bodhisattva or so-and-so Buddha. or maybe in other religions, you can say that I have been sent by Virgin Maria to come to this world, etc. If these are not true, and these, by saying them, this will be considered a major, telling a major lie. And it's one of the four fundamental precepts.
所以佛在这个里面他讲说如果呢我们比丘比丘比丘你毁犯这四个法他就不是这个佛就不认我不认为不认我们这个弟子了我们本来生生宝是佛的弟子嘛帮他传佛他说你呢我们要是毁犯这个非佛弟子我不是你的老师啊你也不是我的弟子了然后呢你我们也没有按照他说的来做就是所谓的说就是佛所说的什么无常苦空无我这四个我们不共其他宗教的这个主要的核心思想都没有办法跟他相应啊，那修禅定啊这些都不要讲了一定会被烦恼禅的禅服这些修定这种事情都没有办法进去的哈，那所以为什么说犯那个世界没有办法跟无常苦空无我相应呢？这个道理是非常深的哈，大家要可以在平常生活思维一下。
So the Buddha said that if anyone violates any one of these four principles, again, this is speaking to the Sangha.Then I shall no longer be this person's teacher, and this person will no longer be my disciple. And then someone who has violated these four major precepts will not be able to correspond or resonate with my teaching, which the four core teachings in Buddhism is impermanence, suffering, emptiness, and no self.These are the four core teachings that is specific, unique to Buddhism, and it's not shared by any other religions. So if you have violated these four precepts, then you will no longer be able to correspond with this teaching. And furthermore, to violate these four precepts, any kind of practice, meditative or concentration practice that you engage in will just become moot and directionless.And the practitioner will actually be entangled in all various kinds of vexations and negative karma. As to exactly why violating these four precepts will lead to all these dire consequences, the underlying concepts and principles are actually very deep and profound. And it's something that I encourage all of you to think about when you go home, to think about the relationship between the precepts as well as the Buddha's teaching.
我随便举个例子哈，我光讲淫欲哈，《圆觉经》就讲了，他说一切无明的根本是淫欲。好，为什么呢？淫欲呢，只要对淫欲有所执着呢，他《金刚经》讲的我相、人相、众生相、寿者相，全部具足。难以解脱那只要四相具足苦空无常无我完全是不相应的好那偷也一样啊偷啊你的东西我的东西就有能所对吧你跟我的对立好而且是你有我没有而且我喜欢你有的好而且还我要拿你的东西哇这里面所有的烦恼之所通通在里面所有的妄想所有的执着全部在里面所以这四根本戒的持守只要毁犯一项是所有佛讲的执着完全是生根蒂固的这个完全没有办法跟佛法跟佛的解脱道是相应的那我们刚刚讲的三种层次的所有的细论全部具足所以佛说这四个看似简单我们一天到晚在念对吧啊，你们也有受三规五戒对吧？对，好像很容易哦。那我们弘一大师说，他连五戒都没办法清净的呢，那更何况是我们呢？五戒持精进，你就那个了呢，正道无上正等正觉。
So why is that? What's the relationship between the precepts and the Buddha's teachings? Let's just take desires, sexual desires as an example. In the Sutra of Perfect Enlightenment, it's stated that desire, sexual desire is actually the root of all fundamental ignorance. Why is that? Because as long as you still have sexual desire, you are still having the views of self, others, sentient beings, and time. So it's not possible to break away from all these deluded views as long as you still have sexual desires. Similar to stealing. When you're stealing, because I don't have it, so I like that thing, so I'm stealing it from the other people. So again, it's an interaction of this dualistic viewpoint. And then furthermore, it develops and becomes delusions and attachment and greed, etc. So as long as once you commit or having these thoughts of stealing, you are already in contradiction of everything that Buddha has been trying to teach, which are, again, impermanence, suffering, emptiness, and no self. You are in direct contradiction with Buddha's teaching. And instead, you are entrenched, you're deeply attached to the notions of self and others and impermanence, etc. And then it will be indeed a violation, and you're committing all these three different levels of path that does not lead to liberation. So every day, we oftentimes, once you have taken the three refuges and five precepts, we recite this very often, these four precepts. We're familiar with them. People don't think much of it. But really, to uphold these precepts strictly is very difficult. And in fact, if you're able to uphold them to absolute purity, then you have already reached the state of the Buddhahood. Great Master Hong Yi, he actually said himself that he's not able to purely uphold the five precepts himself. So that shows the significance and profoundness of the four fundamental precepts.
再来哈，什么是真破戒哈？那我们讲说，法师，我都持戒，我都没有做，哈，包括我们法师哈，就说，哎，我也没有这四个我都没有做呢哈。那你持戒真的没有破戒吗？好，那大宝积经里面就讲说，什么是真破戒呢？如果你觉得你自己持戒清净，然后你去毁犯那些犯戒的人呢，而且你还觉得说哇比你厉害哈，然后你这个犯戒，你这个哈，把人家凌辱一番哈，这叫做真破戒。好，好，这就来了哈，这就来了哈。请问我们教戒里面听到什么什么哈，丑闻案，对不对？我们的心态可不可以去轻毁这些人呢？可不可以去凌辱这些人呢？好，至少我们比丘尼是不可以的。当我们知道说，姑且不管是真是假，说啊，有一个法师哦，他哎怎么样哦，哎犯了淫戒性丑闻，保持缄默哈。为什么？第一个，我们不知道真相；第二个呢，不可以侵，我们的戒律是不可以侵犯破戒的人。好，因为在刚刚不是有讲吗？戒定慧跟什么淫怒痴皆是犯行。当我们有我持戒静静，你犯戒的时候，是不是又有能所啊？好，是不是又有烦恼啊？是不是又有无明呢？好，就是光这样的一个对立，就违反什么？中观的修持，所以大宝积经就直接讲真破戒，就算没有违犯，但是如果你做了这件事情，你就真的破戒了。
So in the Maharatnakuta Sutra, it explained what would be considered as a true violation of the precepts, thatIf you become arrogant of your own upholding of the precept, thinking that you do it so well and you're upholding the precept so purely, much better than other people, that is a violation of precepts. And that you start to slander those people or insult those who have, on the surface or not, violated the precepts. That's also, for you, a violation of the precept. And so if you are arrogant about your precepts and then start slandering and insulting other people who have broken precepts, then those are, according to the sutra, considered as true violation. So let's use the sexual scandals that we see in the field of religion. Do you, upon hearing these kind of news, then do you think your own head look down on those people who have, according to the news, committed those transgressions? Or do you start talking badly about them, insulting them, or even gossip about them? If you actually engage in any of these kind of behaviors, you yourself as a Sangha, you are breaking the precept, because one of our fundamental precepts of Sangha is not to speak illy about people who have broken the precept. Well, there are several reasons behind it. One is it true? Has what's been reported or being passed around really the truth? We don't even know if it's the truth. And two, that we are not supposed to, according to the monastic precept, not to insult those who have made the transgressions. Because after all, if you do that, then you are again in direct contradiction with the non-dualistic view that is at the core of Buddha Dharma. You will, by slandering other people, insulting other people, you have the views of self and others, and you are engaged, your mind is tainted with three poisons of greed, anger, and delusion. So having this dualistic mindset, you are contradicting the practice of middle path. And these are the reasons why even hearing the so-called news about different kind of transgressions by religious people, that you should uphold your own precept of not insulting those people.
看到大家脸色比较凝重，这个在处理每一个宗教的宗教师破戒的问题，在这个章节，因为我时间的关系没有办法下次再讲，要解释清楚一点，但是呢，像我们现今社会常常会遇到，我目前那次我有跟天主教的神父大家也在讨论嘛因为奇怪，天主教最近有一些很性丑闻嘛很久了，然后呢，这些受害者也隐藏了很久然后呢，又说教廷又没有好好的去面对处理这个问题那引起就是非常大的一个社会的一个舆论但是呢，佛教也有过去几年也有那有知道的不知道的也有那在读到这个章节的时候我就开始想到说，其实对于受害者，我们要给予关怀跟就是补偿，社会舆论也必须要能够很正常的看待这些受害者。的同时呢，在这部经里面，他是有讲到说，宗教师的惩罚，宗教师的惩罚要，除非他犯了这个社会上的这个法令的问题是不可避免的，要违反的法令的问题，那要法律出来譬如他杀人了这法令亦要依法办理但是就是说深重宗教师的惩罚在这里面，就是说要依宗教师的法来处理，而不是今天你一个路人，假路人你看到他犯错，你就拿一个棍子打他。这里面有一个非常非常关键性的问题是当我们对一个宗教师就是失去恭敬心，或是拿刀子就惩罚他，然后或是甚至经文里面讲就干脆你是国王，你就把他酷刑把他杀死 其实你已经对佛法僧不能够产生恭敬心了。就是如果你对于一个犯戒的比丘用这样严厉的惩罚方式的时候是不能的。所以在他经典里面有讲说，即便哦，这个叫做这什么袈裟，对不对？他说即便呢他的身上还有一片袈裟，你都必须要很恭敬他，不管他是持戒清净还是破戒的比丘。那他破戒僧团自然有他的方法，有方法来处理。那下一次呢就会跟大家分享啊，这个犯戒的比丘呢我们应该怎么就是大众还有包括我们法师面对犯罪的法师的时候呢，我们应该怎么样处理，然后什么样的人什么样的法师在僧团里面，什么样的法师可以出面处理犯罪的比丘，不是我任何人都可以站起来处理的哈。你还要具有五德，自五德跟他五德。那我就发现说，诶，这个佛陀教我们的这个方法里面，在我们日常生活也非常有用。今天假设你看到一个人做坏事，请问你要不要直接去告诉他说，诶，你不要做坏事，你已经做坏事我看到了，你要去认错，你要去自首。在读了这段之后呢，我对我很大的启发哈，因为我常常就是那个直言不讳哈，诶，你不要这样做啊，你不能这样做啊哈。那当然国行法师不是会说嘛，他说你在他心中没有分量，请你不要随便去哈，去跟人家哈，对吧，告诉人家应该怎么修，改错犯错要怎么改哈，因为你在他心中没有分量。但是佛陀就讲得很好，他说你要举罪的人要有自无德跟他无德，如果你没有这个德行，你不 qualify 举罪。同样的，在我们这个世间上，法官不是你告他犯错吗？法官你要当法官，我觉得也要这个自无德跟他无德非常的重要。那今天如果你是一家之主这个哥哥打妹妹不对，对不对？姐姐打弟弟不对，对不对？你身为一家之主，你必须要处理的时候呢，请你提醒自己自无德跟他无德如果你还没有办法把你的心准备好的时候呢，你先暂时不要开始惩罚，不要去判审判跟处罚。那我觉得这个是佛陀教我们的智慧，不管是在僧团里面，在一般公司里面你是老板或是说你身为一家之主在家庭里面，我觉得都是非常一个好的概念。那这样子的一个处理方式，这样的一个心态，其实才能够真正的为这个家庭，为这个公司，为这个社会，为这个僧团带来和平与那个祥和，真正的清净。不然呢都只是什么嗔恨心在对嗔恨心，嗔恨心在对嗔恨心的时候，你不管怎么处理，你都没有办法来为这个社会为这个世界带来 公平与正义。 impossible， 因为我们的因地是嗔恨的。
As I was starting to talk about this section, I observed the faces of the people in the audience, and many of you seem very solemn about it. And because after all, this has been one of the hot topics, all these sexual scandals that's happening within the religious communities. And it has been going on for quite some time already, and the victims have also been harmed and stay hidden for a long time as well. So there are several levels to look at this. Toward the victims, of course, we need to show them our support, and they need to be compensated in certain ways, and the society has to support them and welcome and embrace them in the way that would help them heal. But as to the religious people who had committed the transgressions, if the transgression is a direct violation of the law, then they should indeed to be punished by the law. However, if it's not in direct violation of the law, then within the Sangha, there would be a code of the Sangha in place to deal with the violators. It should not be done by outsiders, people in the vernaculars or in the other religions. The reason for this is because there's a very pivotal point that you need to understand, that if an outsider or one of us becomes the person that is dishing out these punishments, these very harsh words or harsh punishment, it actually creates a harm. It harms the person that's giving out the punishment, because by doing so, you will lose the respect that you have within yourself toward the religion and toward these people that transmit the religion, the teachings of religion. And by losing this respect for these religious people, ultimately it will hurt your own practice in the long run. So there is actually a saying in the sutra that even if the person that is only wearing just one shred or one thread of the robe, then we should continue to respect this person. Again, the Sangha community within itself has principles and guidelines in place to deal with the people that violate the precepts. It should not be done by people outside the community. And next time, we will go into further details about Buddha's teaching, how the Buddha teaches us to deal with the violators. And he also talks about who should be the one that qualifies to handle the violators. And as a preview, the person who actually qualifies to deal with the Sangha, the monastics that breaks the precept, should be someone who has the five virtues, the five intrinsic virtue and the five external virtues. It's not everyone within a Sangha who qualifies to be giving out punishments or dealing with the transgressors. So, and I find that this kind of guideline is actually very helpful for us in our daily life. A lot of people tend to be, I myself as an example, I tend to be very direct. I tell people when I see they do something wrong that you shouldn't be doing this or you should change your behavior. But according to Guo Xing Fa Shi, he would say something like, you don't have enough significance in that person's mind to be saying this. Whatever you say would just be moot or useless or even be harmful. So this is a very good reminder for myself that to be someone who is pointing out wrongs in other people, you need to have intrinsic virtues in place. And this goes with judges in the legal system, as well as even the head of a household. Sometimes within the family, you see the children fighting or their disputes. Before you are so eager to jump into the situation to decide who is right or wrong and giving out punishments to this person or that person, it's very important for you to first reflect whether in the moment your mind is settled and you actually encompass the five virtues, without which any kind of punishment or judgment that you dish out to the offenders will merely be a reaction out of your own anger. And when a punishment is dished out, not from a place of fairness and settled mind, if it's dished out from a place of anger, then there's no point in talking about peace and harmony within the society. And this applies to businesses. If you're the head of an office, the head of a household, this is a principle to keep in mind, to reflect within before you make judgments and pronouncing other people's faults.
所以、哦、结束以前、哦、身为佛教徒、哦、假设呢你隔壁邻居家的小孩、哦贪吃、哦或是吸毒、偷你的钱、哦、去买毒品、哦、或是他想买什么东西、哦、他偷你的钱、哦、千万不要先把他吊起来毒打一顿、哦、或是直接送警察局、哦应该有更慈悲更有智慧的做法、哦、下一次再讲。
So before we end, as a Buddhist practitioner, if you one day find the kid in your neighbor's kid causing offenses such as being really greedy about food or stealing your money to buy drugs or whatnot, remember to wait and do not immediately jump in and start beating up that kid. There's got to be ways that's more compassionate and more well thought out. And as to the guidelines behind what we can do toward offenders, that's something we'll discuss in our next lecture.